This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
I have JD Graham in the green room. We want to bring him in.
Let's bring him in.
Oh, yeah.
There he is.
Hey, what's up?
JD Graham.
JD. Welcome.
Can y'all hear and see me very well? I was trying to.
No, that's an awesome background right there.
Yeah, wall of guitar.
You and Dean get along.
That's that wood right there came off like a schoolhouse porch up in northern Arizona that was like 90 years old, and a buddy of mine's dad, they tore it down, and he had a big stack of it there, and I'm like, oh, that's the perfect wall that I want to hang my guitar.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, are you in Arizona?
I am.
Okay. That's a good music scene. It's a good history of musicians coming out of there.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a cool, like, it is and it isn't. I mean, you have a lot of good history here, but, like, maybe people will be mad at me for saying this, but Arizona also now has become like a cover band wasteland. I mean, there's that's what I call it. I don't even play here. There's a few places that I still play here, but not a lot. I kind of made the decision about 6 months ago. I'm not competing against family reunions and prime rib dinner conversations.
Well, Don, when we talked to Don Dokken a couple of weeks ago, he moved to Arizona or was it New Mexico?
New Mexico.
Okay.
But you know, it's interesting that it's a sad commentary when people don't want to hear original music at a venue. Like they just want cover bands, and that's been that way for a while.
It's crazy. I've only been in Nashville a couple times. I just made a new album out there last week, but I'd never been down to Broadway. And so I was like, all right, let me go see what's going on down here. And like, I walked into about seven places and I asked every place that had somebody play it, hey, can y'all play an original song? They said, man, we'll get fired if we play it. It's in our contract. They won't want us playing any originals here. And so that was just such
Nashville.
That was such a turnoff. Now, mind you, it's Broadway, and they say down in Midtown that things are a little bit differently. But man, it just left a terrible taste in my mouth that there are all those people down on Broadway. I mean, they're about selling beer. They're not about music. It's not about the music on Broadway. It's about selling alcohol and selling food and keeping people with that familiar taste in their mouth, which leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Pun intended.
JD, I want to get right to this. I'm not sure if I said this, but I did a special for Strike TV back on Veterans Day. I actually included one of your songs on it because your songwriting is so poignant. And I know that you draw from a pretty dark history. And when we get into topics like substance abuse, that's something that becomes very personal for me as well. But can you tell me a little bit about your inspiration? Because your music's incredible. It just is.
Well, just a little bit of my backstory. I was a drug addict for 25 years. Today I have, what's the date today? The 12th? Yeah, I have 6 years, 8 months, and 12 days of being clean and sober.
Thank you, guys. Congratulations.
And I wasn't your typical.
I got mine too.
Oh, awesome. Can't congratulations.
See it. It's back, yep.
That's
I'm
awesome.
I'm not too far ahead of you either.
Well, I mean, I'm just happy that every day I get to wake up now and nothing is given to me. I have to work for it. But you know, sobriety is fragile and I find that, you know, every once in a while that stuff will start creeping up and it won't be that I want to get high. It's like, I just want to get an escape. But you know, my history is, you know, by the time I was, I've been taking pills since I was 11 years old, had an anxiety disorder and I got hooked on the benzos. By the time I was 16, I was taking medicine out of all of my friends' parents' medicine cabinets. And by the time I was 20, I had four doctors and was selling a lot of drugs. I was selling a couple pounds of cocaine every couple of weeks. And just, it was just a very destructive lifestyle. But I've been in the trenches of addiction for 25 years. And then I did some prison time here in Arizona. I've been out of prison for, February will be 2 years. I did 6 years out here in the state of Arizona, and that finally did it for me. I finally said, all right, you know what? I said, God, here we are. You got me in the, I think all along, God just wanted to get me in a prison cell where I didn't have any other distractions and have like a one-on-one conversation that I couldn't run from. and he gave me a choice, and luckily I chose the right way. And so, you know, as far as the songwriting, I write about things that have happened to me and things that I've seen. When you do 6 years in prison, you see a lot of very interesting situations and stories unfold right in front of your eyes. And you also get tapped into the history of the struggle of just countless men that have done, you know, a lot of time. So it provides a lot of subject matter. And like, my songwriting is not, I don't sit in rooms with a bunch of other people trying to write a song for another artist or for radio. I heal through my music. And so whenever I'm having bad things happen in my life or struggle or stuff, I write about them. And my goal is human connection. My goal is not the radio. My goal is not critical acclaim. My goal is to create spiritual and emotional connectivity with the listener. And that is my goal. I have no other goal. People ask me all the time, why don't you have a record label, and all, or why don't you look for a deal? I'm like, well, that's just not, I'm not interested. I mean, I wouldn't, if the situation was right, you know, it'd be cool to have some help, but I mean, I'm doing all right now, and I don't want to change what I'm doing.
Yeah. Your music definitely connected. Don, what was the comment on, or the quote on his website?
I love this. Is a, I knew I would meet my demons in prison, that one of us would die. I just didn't know which one of us would walk out of there alive.
True story. Yeah, I mean, there couldn't be more truth to that. I mean, I knew when I went in there, I didn't stop getting high until the day I signed my plea. I signed a plea for negligent homicide out here in Arizona. I was charged with manslaughter originally, and I wanted to plead guilty right off the bat. I was guilty. I got in a car accident, and I was not sober. And I wanted to plead guilty, but my attorney's like, man, you got to like let the process unfold. And so that year between the accident that I had and me signing my plea, my drug addiction became like extremely supercharged. I was on the needle. I was, you know, my normal dose of pills was 20 to 25 Perc 30s a day, and probably 5 to 6 Xanax bars a day on top of the powder. I was doing a lot of cocaine at the time. So it was just reckless. I was going back and forth from here to Mexico doing things I don't even want to talk about on air. However, if you listen to my songs, I talk about them, right? But you know, sometimes I don't want to make anybody else, you know, uncomfortable. But it's all in my music, and I just write those things down. And I didn't know on day one, I had no clue whether I was going to maintain my sobriety or not. For those of you guys that don't know, there's more drugs in prison than there are on the street. And like, you got to walk less than 50 yards to get them. Before I even got to my first cell in a Red Rock Correctional Facility, cell HD65, from the intake to me walking across the yard with all my stuff, 4 people walked up and offered me heroin in that first 150 yard walk.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So some people that don't know about that, and you know, I've made some mistakes and some enemies in my life, and there's some folks like, oh, he just got sober because he went to prison because he couldn't get anything, which I always just, I don't argue that point with them, but it's not true. But I used to be so confrontational and willing to fight about anything, and that's just not who I am anymore. So but I do try to like to tell the story that those guys that stay sober in prison are they're conditioning themselves for the outside world, because in prison you don't have anything to lose. You have everything to gain by staying in there just completely out of your mind and letting the time fly by. But I wanted to change my life, and I've effectively done that. I get to be a dad. Now I get to be a husband, a brother, a friend. One of my friends that I work with sometimes had $50,000 in a bag. He was going to the bank in the front seat, and he pulled into a Circle K and left me in the car, right? That was not normal for me back in my drug days, you know. So it's cool to have that respect and that trust from my peers and my family, and be what I think God's always wanted me to be.
Wow. But Don, do you have a clip?
Yeah, I want to play A Pound of Rust.
Okay.
For everybody, and then it leads to a discussion, because you know it kind of sums up kind of what you've been talking about, what you've been dealing with here. So in order to do that, is the old I gotta put things on mute. I wish I didn't have to, but unfortunately it'll echo like crazy and people will go, what is wrong with you? So this is A Pound of Rust. This song is available. And if you heard JD speak, it is it tells stories. His songs tell stories, and you can hear this, and it's in the video too. So let's sit back and watch a little bit of this. This is A Pound of Rust. And I'm going to bump it.
Well, I've got some things to get off my chest. A few more words to rhyme while I still got some melody left. I've been way up high, I've been underneath. I spent some weekends down in Key West sniffing cocaine on the beach. Hell, I burned some nights and I've burned some weed. I've taken handfuls of pills just so I can get some sleep to quiet my mind from all this noise that tells me I ain't good enough, and all the slamming doors. Well, shedding all this old skin is hard, and I feel naked now, because the world can see my scars and where I've been, the hell I've raised again and again. I've been stuck in the mud, now I'm digging out, and my whole life's been a battleground, and I still don't know if I can turn this pound of rust to a pound of gold.
Man, I mean, everyone should just go get that song here. Let's get this one here. Get the audio back. That song hit you, Stormy.
Woo. Yeah.
Yeah, you struck a chord there, JD, with your music.
You know, I just think it's important for me to be very honest in the songs that I do write. And what that does is I wish I could write a book with the amount of emails and like Facebook Messenger and things I get like on a, just throughout the week after playing a show in markets that maybe I've never been to. People open up about their entire lives to me after my shows. And I think I just provide them a comfortable space to have a conversation, like an honest and truthful conversation that's completely judgment free, because man, I'm telling you, if you ever go to one of my live shows, it's all out there. The stories behind the songs, it's all, there's no hyperbole. It's just the absolute unfiltered truth from 25 years of drug addiction and almost 7 years of sobriety. So it provides a lot of contrast. I stay active, although I don't go to like meetings all the time. I stay active in the recovery community. I go speak at different halfway houses and sober living houses. And I don't know if you guys know this about me, but in prison, I was a guitar teacher. I spent about $20,000 on, or was able to facilitate some donations, taught over 500 guys how to play some type of instrument. And I watched music change people's absolute lives. And so kind of a standing thing that I have is when some of my students get out of prison, and it happens all the time, there's still several of them that are in there still teaching. They know on day one, they've got my number. They come by and they get a guitar. And I'm not talking about a piece of crap guitar. I buy nice guitars for the guys that get out. And I put it in their hands and I tell them, look, I'm going to give you an opportunity to continue to express yourself in a positive fashion. With that being said, I'm giving you this guitar, no strings attached, no pun intended, right? If you decide to relapse and go pawn this thing and buy you a big old bag of dope, I'm not going to be mad at you. Like, this is yours. I don't want you to feel like because I gave it to you. Like, you have your own decisions to make. And I just try to provide people that vehicle for self-expression, which in prison, there were not a lot of positive ways for folks to express themselves. And so I wanted to try to do something about that when I was in there. And that's why I convinced the administration to let me start a very comprehensive music education program. Believe it or not, for a year in there, I had a laptop and I was teaching a Pro Tools recording program.
Wow.
They got a new administrator that didn't like that, but they gave me the hard drive and the computer, which was waiting for me whenever I got home. And so what I did is I had recorded countless songs of guys that had been under my wings for 4 or 5 years. Their families that had never known they've even played an instrument I was able to email. The day I got out of prison, I started mixing this stuff and getting the emails to all these family members and sending these songs that these guys have written, and their families never even knew they could pluck an entire string on a guitar, a string on a guitar or piano or whatever we were recording. And it was just so cool. Like, you can do positive things in there, not only in there, but out here if you just try to express yourself in a positive light. But it was the coolest thing I've ever been part of for 45 cents an hour.
Wow.
Well, I'll share with you your song. So, you know, substance abuse, you know it's bad. You hear the stories, but until, I guess, you either walk the line yourself or somebody that you love closely is walking it, I don't think you can really understand that it is a daily, sometimes a minute-to-minute battle. And, you know, one of my daughters is dealing with that. She just hit past her 30-day mark a few days ago. Good. But she's really fighting seriously hard. And I sent her your song, and it moved her so much. She said, you know, the thing about the song is it makes you feel like you're not alone. She realizes she's not alone. She's active in the meetings as well. But, again, very poignant, very, very emotional.
And that's kind of my goal for writing songs is to just help people heal through my story. And then also, you know, not many artists have their telephone number on their website. Like, the whole world has my number, and at shows, I tell people, I give my number out. Anybody struggling, I answer my phone for everybody. If I'm awake, I will answer my phone, and people call that are struggling all the time. And I pick up the phone 30 minutes before I came on this thing. A lady called and I talked to her for 20 minutes. Her son's been in and out of rehab. She just got kicked out of rehab today. And she didn't want advice. She wanted somebody that understood what she was talking about to listen to her and just be there for her. And I love that stuff. That's what I'm supposed to do, you know, and that's, you know, music aside, I want to be here for people that I can help heal through my story, and also not be one of those songwriters and artists that's touring the country that hides in the hotel room. You know, I come out a couple hours before my show starts and I shake everybody's hand that comes to a show and I talk to them. And when I'm done, I do the same thing. I don't just hop up on stage and sing and leave. That's just not my style, you know?
Yeah.
Man, how do you... There's so much to comprehend there.
There's a lot. We don't have long enough time for the interview for me to get into the depth.
No. Well, and there's songs, and plus the show is about the music too. And I could sit here and start dovetailing us more. You have a song called Adeline.
Yeah.
Right. This is a beautiful song too. And it's something I wanted to play a little bit of for everybody as well. And we can discuss it. I mean, your music is something else, like Dean said. I mean, I'm glad he found you, because that's what we're all about here. So let's do this. We're going to play a little bit of this song here. This is Adeline. And here we go.
Oh, Adeline, is there something I could have said to make you change your mind? Perhaps you see the world in a different light. And are you warm behind that curtain where you run to hide? Or are you just shaking bones? Oh, Adeline, did you miss another train that might have taken you home? And did you trade that ticket back for a bag of dope? And did your heart feel betrayed as you watched it go? And are you still scared to leave? Oh, Adeline, are you happy with the choice you made? And did it make you the woman you are today? And do those sidewalk diamonds shine when you're looking down? And do the tears get in the way and blur the lines? Oh, Adeline.
I have to say, what affected me, not just music, you know, lyrically, but the way that the bass line underneath plays, Oh, that just hit me. There's like this bass underneath it that's just playing as a different kind of tone underneath with the chords, and it's just gorgeous.
Man, I tell you what, the guys that I made that album with, I love this album so much that last week I just went and recorded another album with this same exact lineup, same studio, same producer, and there's not like we try to keep my albums pretty bare bones, but it's not like a cookie cutter deal. Like we listen to the songs and we figure out how to gain maximum connectivity through the arrangement, not put a bunch of stuff around it. But yeah, that bass in that song, there's a bass and a baritone guitar on my acoustic guitar that had this really, really haunting low end. Yeah. And I have some songs on my new album that are, they're equally, they're equally as dark people ask me all the time about the sad songs, and I got a review from somebody on my last album that basically drove home the fact that I didn't let any light shine through the album. I mean, you would think it was like the worst album ever, like as far as just darkness. And they said, I think one of the quotes was, it would not be my selection for apt upbeat entertainment, evening entertainment. Of course it's not. And so now I have a quote on all my social medias that say, I don't make songs people can dance to. I make songs people can think to.
This is actually a very sad topic because you read about like Chester Bennington, and for years the songs he would write would come from a very dark place. And then shortly before he died, he was starting to try to come to terms with that. He was trying to turn the corner. If you look at a lot of the songs he was starting to write, they were actually starting to spin more positive. And from what I understand, certain members of the band weren't too thrilled about that because the songs that were paying the bills were the dark songs. So now you have this person that's gone through trauma, is going through a healing process, and being told that you can't write a song from a positive spin. Now we want you to go back to the darkness. And it's a tough story. It's a tough life, you know?
No, I think that's there could be more truth to that. But at the same time, one of the guys I did an interview with, John Woolley, out the Oklahoma magazine, he titled the interview or the album review, J.D. Graham, The Good Kind of Tears. Because while I talk about the dark stuff in the songs, I mean, some songs don't have a happy ending, and I'm not going to like artificially create a happy ending to a song. A week before I went to make this other album, just to give you a little perspective here. So I went to prison because I got in a car wreck, took the life of another man. This happened in October, about 7 years ago. I was down in Sonoyta, Arizona in October, playing Roger Klein's camp out. Roger Klein and Peacemakers are a big deal out here, and they invite me out to some stuff. And my wife has been battling breast cancer for about 6 months. So on the anniversary of this guy dying, I'm out here in a field by myself and my phone, because there's a big cattle ranch out there. My phone rings. It's my wife. And she tells me she just had surgery a week and a half before. Her oncologist had just called her and told her that her cancer had spread into her lymph nodes. And it tested the boundaries of my sobriety. I've struggled with like suicidal thoughts most of my life, which I think is pretty inherent of most drug addicts, right? Sometimes we've caused a trail of destruction and we feel like we deserve nothing but death. So for like 3 weeks, man, I was in like the darkest place. And this is recently. I'm just now starting to come out of it. I didn't know if I wanted to be around. I was looking for an escape of some kind. It wasn't that I was wanting to get high, but I was looking for an escape. It was like I had all this weight all at once, and I was having a hard time dealing with it. But you know what? I called the people that I'm supposed to call. I did what I'm supposed to do, and I wrote a song about it called The Weight I Carry, and I sent it to the guys I'm making an album with 3 days before I headed out to Tennessee, and this is, this song has to go on there or we don't make an album type thing. And then it kind of talks about, from my method and my style of songwriting, it just talks about the truth of what I was going through. I mean, the song starts with the first verse says, the relapse wolf scratched a hole through my door. He's sitting on my couch. There's blue pills on the floor. I can see him real clear. It's eye to tooth. I've been up all night staring at the noose. So it's a super heavy song, but it provided me, the healing during that time, because sobriety is fragile. And Stormy, you know this, and Dean, you said that you have a family member that knows this. It is so fragile. And when I when I talk to guys that they have relapsed and they're like, oh, I got to start all over. I tell them, man, if you had 2000 days of sobriety, you're not at day one anymore. You just screwed up one day. So I think sometimes drug addicts are hard on themselves when they're relapsed and they discount all the work they did and where they came from. So I don't feel like you're starting all over. I tell people to cherish those days that they had. If I relapsed tomorrow, I wouldn't be at day one. I'd be at day, whatever, like 2600 and something where I screwed up one time in between, but I'm not going to discount the amount of sobriety that I achieved, you know?
Yeah. It is challenging and it's painful to watch somebody you love go through it. Yeah, you know, the little things that can, you know, trigger.
You have a song too, called 2 Days South of December.
Okay.
Can you talk about that one a little bit?
Sure. That song is just that song is another one that it's just kind of driving home the idea that, man, I want to change and I'm supposed to change and the timing is right for me to change, but no matter how I try to do it, I can't make, you know, the change fit, you know. And there's a line in there that talks about, you know, sometimes leaves don't change when the seasons turn, you know, which has been true in my life. Like so many seasons I went through and so many things that have happened to me that should have forced change about, they didn't. And that's just a song written from the perspective of, I'm saying south of December. Some of my friends argue, is that before December or after December? And the way I wrote it, it's supposed to be like after December, you know, after the new year, people are making resolutions and winter's officially here and all this stuff. And that just kind of drives home that message of the times that I was trying to get sober and just couldn't do it, like over and over, just tried and tried and it wouldn't stick. And I finally understood what happened, you know, in hindsight. You know, I'm a believer and I've been a believer my whole life, but what I had not done yet is surrendered to God. And there's strength and power in that, in surrender and acceptance. As cheesy as the little AA mantra is, that acceptance is the answer to all of our problems, man, that is like a profound statement that lives in me.
Didn't you get some sort of relief when you're able to give it a name? I'm an addict. Oh my gosh, I'm an addict. Now I know what to do from here.
I always knew that I was, but I kind of, yeah, the surrender helped me. And I always knew I was an addict, but I stood on it. I was wearing it as a crown or a badge of honor. I wasn't, I don't know why. I was almost proud of it at the time. And looking back, I mean, it was the dumbest thing. My wife used to tell me, I used to say, baby, I'm not going to quit. Like you didn't marry a quitter. You know, I was a drug addict when you married me. And if you don't like it,
right. Quitter.
Which was just completely contrary thinking, but it's also, that's how drug addicts think. You know, it's where we don't think right. We're selfish. Right.
That's the thing with your music, though. You can feel the emotion so much in it that it has like the soothing effect. It's almost like puts you in like a state of hypnosis. It makes you relax so much, even though the lyrically it's dark, but it still gives you that soothing effect. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you, man. I'm grateful that you guys listened to my music and felt compelled to reach out to me to talk about it, because you know, in this day and age, us independent guys that don't have a booking agent or a label or anything, it's really cool. Like when people reach out to me to come play at their places, rather than me sending 1,000 emails and not getting a response. And I'm starting to see the fruits of my last album and doing heavy touring and stuff. And I'm getting in places that I thought I'd never be able to play without management and booking and a label. I'm playing Mile Zero Fest in the end of at the end of January down in Key West, which everybody wants to play that. I get to play all my favorite listening rooms across the country in January. I'm going to be out for about a month and a half on tour. And I'm taking Justin Clyde Williams with me for a couple weeks. If you guys don't know who he is, most underrated guy in the United States of America.
He's the what now?
Clyde Williams.
He's the most what you said?
Most underrated musician in America. I get to play with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I played with Josh Morningstar and Billy Don Burns this weekend. That was a great show.
I've talked to Billy on here before. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've played with a lot of people, but man, Justin Clyde, I went and did some shows with him about 6 months ago out in the Carolinas. And man, I believe in that guy's songs. I believe in him as a human. I believe in him as a musician. And I am thrilled to share the highway with him for a couple of weeks here in January. He has an album called Empty Rooms. It's just him, a guitar and a fiddle player, one microphone and a barn. And I listen to it all the time. It's just fantastic.
Well, you know, what were you saying, Dean?
I was just going to say, I'm looking at your schedule right now. So you're going to be in Charlotte and Statesville, North Carolina, come January. So I'm gonna have to make a little bit of drive and come across state and see you.
Never been to the evening. Where are you at, Dean?
I'm right outside of Raleigh.
Okay, so I'm in Dunn. I'm in Greenville. I'm in Charlotte and Statesville.
Statesville is about 40 minutes from me.
There you go, Grizz.
Statesville, where I'm doing, Justin does this, it's called the Old Jail Listening Room in Statesville. It's actually inside of a jail. I've never been there, and it's going to be like a little three or four person ride around. I'm looking forward to the Evening Muse. I've always wanted to play there, and every songwriter wants to play in quiet rooms. And me and Justin are there, and all of those. The Bird's Nest up in Dunn is absolutely fantastic. Docks down there in Greenville is cool. I've been to Docks and the Bird Nest once, and then I go down to Mile Zero after that. We start up at Boxcars in Clinton, Wisconsin. I was there, I don't know, about half a year ago. Absolutely fantastic place. These are places where folks sit down. I tell people all the time, I prefer my audience over 40 and seated. And so whenever I start, I could play 365 days a year here in Arizona in the corner of these places where people are ordering whatever it is they order and talking about whatever it is they talk about. But man, I'm telling you, I put my foot in the ground 6 months ago, and I don't have a lot of Arizona thing shows on my schedule for that reason. There still are a few places out here that I like to play, but as far as setting up in the corner, I'm not doing it anymore.
No, if you were billed correctly as a true storyteller, like just listening to your songs in a studio setting and hearing your voice, you're the kind of person that just you and a guitar can command an entire room. You know, like I witness Ed Sheeran, who's a singer songwriter, playing guitar, and he can command 70,000 people.
Yeah.
But you have the ability to control a room with your style and your voice. Like when I'm listening to you play, you just sit there and you listen. And I said to John Barry, remember when we had John Barry on and we said to him that when he does that one song, Your Love Amazes Me, it's big. You can hear a pin drop when he plays it, right? And that's as big as like 70,000 people yelling is when people are that locked into your songs. So the more rooms you can get in where people are just there quiet and listening to you, I mean, that's an experience of and of itself. I have to come see you play where I'll be just be locked in and listening.
Where are you at, Dom?
I'm in Tampa.
Okay.
A little far from Key West, but.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Key West is going to be a big festival. I mean, if you look at the lineup of the Mile Zero Fest, I look at it still to this day. I'm like, how I'm playing this festival, but whatever, right? I'll take it. The booking world, like some things that I don't get talked about enough is us independent guys that are booking our own shows and we're doing our own merch, we're writing our own songs, and we're recording our own albums, like. That is a full-time job. I have some of my friends that are not in the music business. Like, what do you mean you're busy? You just stand on a stage for a couple hours and play songs. I'm like, man, like I've got about 5 hours on the computer today, building promo videos, sending emails, making phone calls, you know, staying as busy as I like to stay without the traditional booking agent and things of that nature. It's very difficult, but you know, I wake up in the morning and I will not be outworked. And if I get someone that can book me eventually, man, I'd be happy to pay them their fee, you know, because I can focus on the things that I need to focus on. So that is the guys that are out there running up and down the highway that are doing it themselves. I mean, I got a great deal of respect for all of them because it is such hard work, but you got to do it to even have a shot at getting someone that's willing to go out there and advocate upon your behalf. But for me, to get an agent, I mean, I would have to have someone that knew exactly what I was trying to do. You know, don't put me at a place that's trying to sell beer on a Saturday night at 9 o'clock. So it's going to be a bad experience for everyone. And I believe people, we want to drink beer, whatever. I don't care about what anybody else does, but I'm just, my music is not stuff people are going to go out and party to. You know, that's why I try to focus on these listening rooms and hoping to get some tour support and in these small theaters. And, you know, my dream right now is to get out there and do some support for like John Moreland or Chris Knight or some folks like that I really, really admire. Jeffrey Martin, Anna Tivel, those are who I'm listening to these days. Ryan, you guys know who Ryan Colwell is? Ryan Colwell. You have to check him out. Ryan is the one that is co-producing my album, and it's just a monster of a songwriter. He has one of my favorite albums of his is his newest one. It's a couple years old, called Run Like a Bull. But if you ever get a chance, it's C-U-L-W-E-L-L, Ryan Colwell.
He's fantastic. You talked about this song that you wrote, The Weight I Carry, right?
Yeah.
All right. Did you feel, as a songwriter, that after, because you said at that moment the world's kind of collapsing on you and everything's, after you put that to paper, did you feel relief at that moment?
Not at the moment. I'm still coming out of that dark time. I mean, if you want, I don't know if you guys can hear it, I'll play the song for you.
Oh, please. Yes.
We would love it. I would love it.
Let's do it.
I got a guitar right here.
These are our favorite moments.
Yes, they are.
A guitar, huh?
Well, this is my workhorse. This is a Martin D16. I really love it. I recorded this album with a little Gibson. Well, I used three guitars on. I used a Gibson L00, and this is, I buy guitars on Facebook Marketplace, and
I'm like, I see in the green room.
I don't. What happened?
I was just letting Mike from the next interview is on. I was just letting him know he's in the green room. I'm just acknowledging he's there.
Oh, okay. So we'll be right with you. I'm going to take these headphones on and I'll play the song. So you got 4 minutes?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, absolutely.
And then we'll bring in Mike.
Can you hear this all right?
Yep.
Yep.
Go for it. J.D. Graham, everybody.
Relapse wolf scratched a hole through my door. He's sitting on the couch, his blue pills on the floor. I can see him real clear, it's eye to tooth. I've been up all night staring at the noose. I thought I made peace with the man I killed, but I ain't. I just covered it up with a different color paint. But it's starting to peel, and I'm starting to feel everything. Every October I live it all over again. In this way it's 20 stones high, 10 bones deep. It's got me down on broken knees, praying to God that it ends one way or another. And hope is an apparition. Well, this condition I'm in's got me falling again. I'm under the ditch and my heart's caved in. The monarch of misfortune, I hold the crown. Well, my wife's real sick, she's got a look in her eyes. It says, God, come get me, The cancer's taking my smile. And I'd give anything to trade places with her. The hell she's living is the hell that I deserve. I got a rebuilt engine in my head and it's running lean. The choke cable's broken and it backfires when I breathe. And I'm stuck out here somewhere between right and wrong. And I wish like hell that I could tell you this was just a song. But it's the weight that I carry. It's 20 stones high, 10 bones deep. It's got me down on broken knees, praying to God that it ends one way or another. And hope is an apparition. And this condition I'm in's got me falling again. I'm under the ditch and my heart's caved in. The monarch of misfortune, I hold the crown. I hold the crown. Everything gets quiet and time slows down. The hammer comes back, it's steel to crown. Will this bullet take away my way to just add some more?
Holy smokes.
Whoa.
What a song.
Heavy stuff right there.
Very good. Good
duty, wow. Grandma. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Well, thank you for taking time out of your life there to spend it with us. Share your songs with us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for the conversation. Stormy, I encourage you 100% to stay on the right path. Dean, what, if you don't mind, what's your family member's name? And I'll pray for them.
Jessica.
I'll pray for, pray for Jessica. And man, thank you guys so much for reaching out. It really means a lot that folks are hearing my stuff and want to talk about it. And I don't say that from like an egotistical standpoint. I know that I have a lot to offer. Just not only in just the music aside, just my story, right? And the music is just a vehicle for me to share my story and to help other people heal and have that human connection. So I'm extremely grateful to be on here speaking to you guys this evening.
Well, thank you, JD.
Thanks for being here.
I'm going to come see you. Entire heart.
I'm going to come see you next month. It'll either be in Statesville or Charlotte, but I'm going to come see you.
What's that? In Statesville or Charlotte?
You'll either be in Statesville or Charlotte, but I am going to be there. I'm going to come see you.
Let me know. You guys.
I might be there with them. So,
if you that's guys it. Have my number, if you need anything in the meantime, feel free to reach out to me, man. If you got somebody that's struggling, man, Dean, if your family member is struggling, you're welcome to give them my telephone number. I'd be more than happy to have a conversation with
them. That's beautiful,
thank you.
JD Graham, pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thanks, JD.
Thank you, guys.